Welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. We've been doing this show since May, and we've been doing it based on the 2025 Water Safety Plan that came out in May, which said we had some startling statistics here in Hawaii, that drowning is the number one cause of death for children age 1 to 15, that Hawaii has a drowning rate that is second highest in the nation. Less than 2% of Hawaii's second graders have the basic skills to avoid or recover from drowning. And what we're about to talk about today with our next guest, which will be exciting, is that although Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders make up 27% of Hawaii's population, they make up 36% of resident drowning deaths. And the message from the plan is that drowning is preventable. And it's a working document. And the governor, in a press conference, held up this water safety plan and said, if we read this and take it to heart, we can save lives. So I'm excited to have our next guest, John Kalei Carter. I don't have his full name correct, but I'm going to read from the water safety plan, as the governor said, something about our next guest before he tells us what he's been on a mission to do. So John Kalei Car Clark is a researcher in the Department of Health, and he studied the drowning rates of Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders in Hawaii for his 2024 master's thesis, Resident Drowning Accidents in Hawaii, a Descriptive Analysis. We're going to be talking about that today because all the information that's come out in the media has brought this to light. Caitlin Thompson referred in one of her articles currently, it's not just tourists, Hawaii residents drown at an alarming rate. And in that mentions about just the Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders specifically. The background to Kalei Clark is that he is the great grandnephew of Duke Kahanamoku, the legendary Native Hawaiian waterman and five-time Olympic medalist. His great-grandmother was Kahanamoku's first cousin, and like Duke, grew up in Waikiki's historic Kalei neighborhood. He was born in Norfolk Island in the South Pacific, and he was raised in New Zealand. His mother, Sue Pearson, is a renowned artist whose work often reflects two Norfolk and Te Moana Nui Kiwa heritage, and I probably just slaughtered that. His father, Herman Clark, is a celebrated Hawaiian artist, designer, and educator whose creations are deeply inspired by Hawaiian culture and its connections across the Pacific. Clark relocated to Hawaii in 2018 to attend the University of Hawaii at Manoa, a move that allowed him to connect more deeply with his Hawaiian family and cultural roots. He said he undertook the drowning study because equity is a core value in public health, and his current role in the Department of Health enables him to use data to address these disparities. That's what we're going to be talking about today. But there's another piece that I hope he'll talk about. A skilled waterman himself, Clark was a member of the University of Hawaii swim team for 5 of his 6 years at the university. And in July of 2024, he participated in the Epic Swim Maui, the world's first expedition to swim around the island of Maui. The 134-mile swim, completed over 13 days, served as a powerful call to action for global ocean health. Clark was among an elite group of ocean swimmers from 6 continents who swam together to raise awareness about the challenges facing our oceans. This is from a page in the 2025 Water Safety Plan that the governor urged us all to read and act on. So our next guest is Kalei Clark. And I'm very excited to have him because he's been very busy and hasn't been able to come. But I need to tell the listeners that his work and his research made an impact on where we're going with water safety education and awareness that drowning is preventable. So, welcome, Kalei. It's nice to have you.
Oh, aloha, Margaret. Mahalo for the introduction and having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's a great piece they put in the 2025 Water Safety Plan. I really enjoyed reading that and knowing more about you because that tells
Oh,
the
thank
story
you.
about the statistics. It could be, Kaleigh Clark did the research, but to know something about you and your passion for health and equity and disparity, and then you go on to swim about the story you're trying to tell about the health of the ocean. I think everybody should understand what you've done, and I'm just delighted to have you on.
Oh, mahalo, mahalo.
Let's start by telling me how you were drawn to studying this, right? Particularly focusing on resident populations.
Yes, certainly. So kind of as you've prefaced it, the kind of outcome of the study really just feels like it's been part of a larger and ongoing journey for myself. I grew up in a very small coastal town in Aotearoa, New Zealand, named Whakatane. And as a teen, I worked as an ocean lifeguard, as a beach education instructor for our community. So we were teaching elementary, middle school students kind of about the beach safety and the ocean environment. I also competed, swimming and a sport called surf lifesaving at the time. Moved to Hawaii in 2018, started my public health journey, undergraduate degree, and then swam at the collegiate level. So, and then during this time, I was also, working part-time as a swim instructor, just making side money. So, I've been involved in ocean and water related public health for, several years now. 2021 rolls around, and one of my former swimming and surf lifesaving coaches actually connected me to a gentleman named Mark Haimona. And Mark studies and works with the Maori communities on drowning prevention efforts. The Maori are the indigenous people of Aotearoa, New Zealand. And this group has long faced significant disparities in drowning rates. So, Mark's work over a simple coffee and him explaining it to me inspired me to question, what drowning prevention efforts might look like for the Pacific communities here, right? 2022, I began my master's degree in epidemiology at the University of Hawaii. And as I learned it, epidemiology forms the backbone of public health. So, in order to make informed public health decisions, we have to start with data, whether that comes from mo'olelo, that's stories, statistics, the numbers, testimonies, and other sources. And so it's during this program that I conducted my capstone research under Dr. Daniel Galanis. He is an epidemiologist at the Emergency Medical Systems, sorry, Services and Injury Prevention Systems branch at the Hawaii Department of Health. And so that's where I began my kind of student researcher role. That's where I started this work that's in the report. And so while I was studying under Dan, I read several studies documenting drowning disparities in Indigenous communities, not only in Aotearoa, but also Australia, Canada, and Alaska. And, at the time, I'm reading through all these papers, and I couldn't find anything that examined drowning among Kanaka Maoli. Particularly the community here, the Kanaka Maoli community here, and our Pacifica cousins. And so really, my work as a student researcher was just done to fill the puka, to fill the gap in the research. So that's a little bit about the story of how we got here.
Well, yeah, I think it's really exciting to do a master's thesis, which was a descriptive, right, analysis of the drowning population. So let's talk for people. I like listening to data, but can you walk us through some of the primary data sets you relied on for your analysis, and how did you address the underreporting or miscalculation, classification, and drowning records while compiling your data set? It's kind of two
Certainly.
questions. Yeah.
Great question. So, while I was studying under Dr. Galanis at the Department of Health, the EMS branch, we chose to utilize death certificate data. And that was given to us by the DOH Office of Vital Statistics. And we used the years 2014 to 2022. And so all of these death certificates that we used had drowning codes listed in their cause of death categories. Death certificates also included several other variables, things like ethnicity, residency, status, the age, and the activity that the person was doing at the time of their death. And then for the research, we also used population estimates from the Census Bureau, US Census Bureau, particularly a survey called the American Community Survey, otherwise known as the ACS. And this is data that's publicly available. Moving into like how we managed underreporting and misclassification. So a death certificate is classified after a coroner completes an autopsy, and then they record the cause on the death certificate, and then that information is entered into official records. So as researchers, we are using this data, but the process of data collection is out of our hands. However, I will say that an important question we considered was how to distinguish deaths caused from drowning or by other causes when an individual was in the water.
Right.
So to address this, Dan and I chose to take a broader perspective. It's kind of standard practice to use only the underlying cause of death to identify drownings. My mentor and I chose to include contributing causes of death. And so this kind of allows us to adopt more of a comprehensive multiple cause of death approach.
Okay.
I'll dive a little bit into like kind of the classification. So the death certificates, they often classify causes of death as immediate, contributing, and underlying cause of death. So an immediate cause of death is something that's defined as an injury or a disease that directly leads to the death. Contributing are defined as like diseases or injuries that obviously contribute to the outcome. And an underlying, which is what we use in drowning most of the time, is that the disease or the injury that kind of initiates the chain of morbid events leading to the death. Right? So I hope that makes sense.
Yes,
Of
you're
the
doing.
32 deaths where drowning was contributing cause, some had heart diseases, some had unintentional injuries as the underlying, but these were included. We felt it was important.
Right. And we can talk more about why your research shows, why Native Hawaiians are about 1.5 times more likely to drown than other ethnic groups. But has your research, or we can talk later about this, non-fatal drownings versus inclusion of drownings in research? Because we know that that impacts people, communities, families, and everything else. But I don't, we can.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, being the student, I was very focused on just the fatal drownings. So I didn't quite dip my toes in the non-fatal world yet. But you did bring something up that I feel is important. The research shows that Our findings show that between the years of 2014 and 2022, the Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander population in Hawaii experienced a fatal drowning rate that was 1.5 times higher than those of non-Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders residing in the islands. So this research does not measure risk or the likelihood of somebody is to drown. It's really looking at just patterns by observing what has already happened.
Can you give me more information on that?
Yeah, certainly. So risk, at least in epidemiology, you need to measure risk, you really need a control group and an exposure group. And when you're dealing with something like real life injuries, it would be almost impossible to test that.
Right.
It would be unreasonable. Risk, you can measure control and exposure in a lab, right? Something that's more controlled, a controlled environment. Again, we're working with kind of real world stuff here. We're just looking at observations and describing what's happened in the past.
So, what do you think are the underlying factors that drives this disparity?
Yeah, great question. Again, my research didn't quite investigate this yet, but I can give my opinion on it.
Okay.
It's my opinion that the time spent in the water with extended family was historically essential for passing on water safety knowledge and just the skill set, right? And I'm looking
Right.
at my kupuna, my Auntie Aulani and that generation of cousins, the Kahanamoku brothers and sisters, all raised in Kalia. There was no swim lessons, right? They just spent time together. They spent time in the water, in the environment, and they really got to know it. So, today I believe that there are economic pressures that often keep families from spending time together in the ocean or near water. Folks have to work more hours, folks have to
Right.
work more jobs, and just to be able to live here,
Right.
and this leaves probably less time to pass down that cultural knowledge. Despite these challenges, I think the connection to the ocean still exists for Pacifica, for Kanaka here. And so, I believe that this group in particular is still drawn to this to these bodies of water, whether it's fresh, whether it's salt. We come from these spaces. And so, I would speculate that the Kanaka and Pacifica people here, we just continue to engage in these spaces more frequently, possibly than other groups in Hawaii. And again, it's just a reflection of the deep cultural and historical connection that we have.
Right.
So that would be my kind of speculation.
Well, it says in the water safety plan that we'd lost our way and been disconnected from the culture of watermen and waterwomen, a legacy, as you say, everyone in the family was in the water all the time. And you're talking about the economic issues trying to live here. So, what? There's just one other question in here before we talk about. What is the headline takeaway you want every local family to hear? But what role do you think the cultural practices like ope'e picking and shoreline fishing played in resident drowning incidents? Do you think that was a big piece?
Yeah, so there were a considerable number of resident drownings, of all ethnicities, where folks were free diving and or piggy picking. These are really important cultural activities, and in no way should people be deterred from practicing. I think,
Right.
instead we can probably risks surrounding these activities can be reduced through education, through taking precautions and knowing one's limits. In that, I also believe we have a real opportunity to strengthen our safety education through cultural competency. So making a safety education relevant to the community you're working with, to the environment that these people enter in. So I think there's a real opportunity there.
How do you see us doing that? I mean, I see Dwayne DeSoto making real progress, and he's now going to have water safety as a pilot program in the schools, which I think is great. We have Nikki Roderick, who's coming with Free Dive Safe in the schools, which is teaching how to be safe free diving. But do you have any other ideas about how you'd like to see this be implemented?
So yeah, I mean, there's a, again, opinions. I think the world of Nikki. I think the world of what Dwayne guys are doing. I think it's just awesome, and I think they're doing it right. You know, they have a massive following and people are really interested in getting their pinky involved. So that is an amazing place to be. I'm very interested in reading how cultural competency and water safety is conducted in Aotearoa. I think there exists swim lessons in their kōrero Māori in their language.
Yes.
And you know, one thing I've noticed is there's real power in making a space yours. So any type of education surrounding the water, you know, if you can integrate kind of the thought processes, the language, the protocols, to the group that you're targeting, then that's when messages really start to come home. I think, you know, we've had a few cultural renaissances here in Hawaii, and people are really interested in getting their children involved and just more involved in the culture and the language.
Yes.
So if there was, say, a swim lesson offered in ʻŌlelo Hawaii, perhaps the fact that it is ʻŌlelo Hawaii, that it is a, you know, Hawaiian run, that it is involving protocols, involving ʻŌli, that might be a way to bring people in. You know, people are just very interested in learning more about the culture, and I think if you just make more pathways available, then you know that's an attraction point for folks.
I think that's a really excellent idea. So you want to learn more about what's going on in New Zealand in terms of that? Is that what you were saying? You wanted to read more about their research on that piece?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, historically the Pacific has always leaned on each other for different knowledges, you know,
Yes.
navigation. We came back, we brought it back from Micronesia. Punana leo, modeled after language nests in Aotearoa. So, you know, I really love the idea of sharing. I'd also love to just read a bit more into kind of the indigenous pedagogy of how folks learn, like just the process of it. You know, are folks more hands-on? You know, different groups learn differently.
This goes along with what we're trying to do on the show. I've had people from the UK, I've had people from Australia. I'm about to have somebody from Dubai, which would be a different part of the culture. But the people in Australia, the people in the UK are telling me they want to collaborate and they want to learn more and share ideas. And I think you're absolutely right. And I haven't connected with anybody from New Zealand. So if you After we've talked, you give me that contact. I'd like to speak to somebody. I know it's ingrained in the schools there, right? Water safety. I mean, it just is part of it. And in my opinion, I think it should be here. And I think what you're saying about the culture is absolutely right on, because everybody can learn from that. People who visit can learn from that. So, I think that's really a great idea. Kalei.
No, mahalo. Yeah, I think there's one more thing I'd wanted to touch on. In terms of kind of protocols, looking back at some of the older Ōli that our kupuna did, they really involved the skill of kilos, just to look, to observe, to slow down and acknowledge. I think about this one chant, and I look at it as a guide for kind of water safety.
Okay.
And it's this one that talks about the wave of hilo, and it describes how the wave breaks. So whether it's surging, whether it's spilling, it talks about the wind kind of spraying the water off the back, how it crashes it into the rocks, how it pounds the earth. And then talks about an individual who had the malo, the traditional loincloth, and urges that person to kind of gird it, to pull it tight, as maybe a UFC fighter might wrap up their gloves, or a businessman might fasten their tie as to get ready. It's kind of, you're pulling the loincloth tight to acknowledge, okay, this is a big challenge. If it's loose, it's going to come off. I feel very lucky because our kupuna left us a lot of amazing, messages that I think, again, we just have an amazing opportunity to bite down deeper into that kind of stuff,
I think
particularly here.
that could make a great model, and you should be involved in that. Definitely.
Mahalo.
I
I'm
really
enjoying myself. I'm enjoying just reading and learning what I can.
So you'll have to give me that chant too, because I'd like to have access to it. It's called the Wave of Hilo.
I'll pass it on to you. I'll send you an email soon.
Okay, because I'll put it in a link to your show that
Okay.
and what you're doing. So let's look at policy and prevention. You've been involved with that. The 2025 water safety plan sets a goal of zero preventable drownings. So from your researcher standpoint, what would it take to make meaningful progress towards that goal? You've kind of talked about that in the last couple of minutes, but to get to a
Sure.
zero, because that includes visitors as well as residents.
Right. I think one of my mentors kind of mentioned to me that in terms of injuries, all injuries are in a way preventable. Some are more preventable than others, and it's, again, it goes back to education, it goes back to precaution and self-awareness. So that's the starting point,
What kind of message can we say? Because the mayor was on my first show and he ended up saying, I think we've got the messaging wrong. Because he says, I'm out surfing and I tell people that come, this isn't such a great place to surf. And they think I'm telling them, you can't take my spot or something. Yet he's trying to give guidance, no, because he has local knowledge that it's a really risky place to surf, but he knows it and he's mindful and he understands. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think again, it comes down to, our education, on our willingness to learn too. And it is important. It goes to show like the importance of, and the gold that, our my seniors have in their knowledge. They know that this place is not a great spot for maybe, learners. So again, that's you've outlined it perfectly. We need to investigate messaging. We need to investigate how to get our points across in a way that's relevant, to our audience.
Right. I think bringing in the culture more makes total sense to me. instead of just a message they kind of hear over and over again that they could be hearing anywhere, possibly, when they go someplace. But something that's very specific to Hawaii and represents respect for the ocean and the land and the people, and that basically everybody's a guest here, whether we live here or not. Possibly, I don't know.
Sure.
What do you think? So, further research, we've talked. I know that people in your department and in the Water Safety Coalition have talked about how do we get better data collection, right? And what are the biggest blind spots do you see in our current data collection? I'm amazed that you got that much data.
Me too. I'm amazed that they trusted me with it. Very grateful. Sure. So yeah, certain data gaps. At present, Hawaii does not have an official definition of what a swimmer is, and stakeholders have yet to reach consensus. So,
Oh, well, that's interesting.
yeah, and it's something that the water safety community is actively working on to define, what constitutes a swimmer and the competencies involved with that. I think tracking, once this is set, tracking these abilities and these competencies over time is necessary for better understanding of, for programmatic purposes, for improvement, all of that.
Does anybody else have a definition?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. I think we think it would be helpful, we take a lifeguard test. There are certain competencies that you must have. Even as a rookie lifeguard in New Zealand, there were certain competencies that I had to be able to do. So coming up with measurables, very important. I will say another gap that I found was there is a lack of ongoing surveillance for our community's swimming abilities and our ocean awareness or our education, the water safety education. So there's no measurement for that set yet. Again, it's just really important that we know, where is our community at? What can we actually swim? How many of us can swim? And what does it mean to swim?
Well, in Singapore, I know they have to pay us, they have to pass a test to swim so much before they graduate. But I think getting back to having water safety in the schools and then looking at how that makes a difference, I would think would be beneficial for sure.
Yeah, I mean, water safety in general, I think that's just, paramount right now.
It's been mentioned a bunch of times in the town hall that was just recently here that it's got to be a priority at the top to make a difference. That we can work in these little silos, like Dwayne said, but we got to collaborate and we got to move on it together. And continued research, I see, is very, very important to really understand because you identified an issue, which is really, really important. And I don't know if you're going to be continuing that research at the Department of Health, but maybe you have to do it on the side. Because I think it's really interesting research, and it got everybody thinking outside the box because everybody thought, well, yeah, we got a drowning rate, but it's all visitors, right? It's not anybody else. And I think it's really important. And I think there's a disparity because there are swimming lessons available, but they cost. Or there's junior lifeguard, but it's very limited in who can get in because it fills up right away. So, your idea of incorporating a plan that has the culture, the values, and water safety makes total sense.
I would like to touch on kind of one more gap that I've seen, and that would be just an assessment on a resident's attitudes towards water safety. So including, an understanding of supervision roles and maybe safety precautions.
Yes.
and ability. I think there's opportunity there to, further gain understanding of our residents here.
Well, the Department of Health came out that with the good message, eyes up, phones down for parents and kids by pools. And we've managed, the governor has managed to, pass the bill that has to do with retention ponds. So that's something. We still don't have fencing around pools, which Jessamy Horner said that if we did get that bill passed, we'd have more money coming in from the federal government, right? And we also need some kind of consistent way that people get information. We have lots of sources that people can get about water safety for this island, but it'd be great if there was just one that people knew they could go to get that information. I think you're working on that in the Department of Health at High Water Safety, right? Is that what it's called? Database.
There is a yeah that there's that initiative. I'm not involved with it myself, but
Yeah.
yeah, that's something that's
Because
ongoing.
if you come here, where are you going to get your information, right? If you want to learn about a beach or whatever, and you're on vacation and you're not really trying to get that, that's not your main goal. But it all goes back to messaging, I guess, and what you're saying. And the community needs to pay attention to water safety. I think a lot of people I've talked to say, I know everything about water safety, so I don't need to know anymore, right?
Yeah, interesting.
So what did you find surprising you the most about that during your research that surprised you?
I mean just the outcome itself, the drowning,
Right.
the elevated drowning rate, compared to those outside of the heritage. I think I would have imagined that it, because of the history, because of the connection, that it would have been different. So
Right.
that's kind of been the big takeaway.
So, what would you like to leave our listeners with? Because your research was great and it got people thinking, and Duane's got a pilot program for the schools, and Nikki's come in and done her work, but you're looking at a bigger plan, right? Something that impacts everyone, and that coming from the higher up to have be excited that water safety should be in our schools, it should be a priority, and that investing in young people is really important, and not investing is probably a liability, right?
My takeaway is that it to families, I have, again, we have to work longer, work more jobs, prioritize. I would just urge them to prioritize water safety, for their keiki. If you can make time, if you can get lessons, you can spend time with your elders learning about the environment. All of that will add to, the child's education and hopefully a very competent water person. Water safety education itself is important, and wherever you can get it. Having it is more important than versus where you get it from.
Yes, I agree. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I've been wanting to talk to you for at least 2 months. And you've been talking to everybody, the papers, the TV and everything, because your research was so enlightening to all of us. And so we're starting to think about things a lot differently. And I think that helps everybody, including visitors. And there's issue with visitors too that we did not talk about. But And maybe Bridget Velasco may come on and talk about her work on snorkeling, but that's a whole different issue. I don't know if you can say anything about that. We didn't say we would talk about that, but we know that they're drowning of visitors is mostly snorkeling events, right? And so that's a complicated issue with lots of different factors, right?
Absolutely. And I'll leave it to Bridget to dive deeper into that, 'cause that's very specialized research that she's doing, and we're so lucky to have her.
Well, the department is very lucky to have you, and I'm so thrilled you're back in Hawaii, so you can continue to make really important, progress for us here on the islands, because what you did, I think, was really impressive at your young age. So
Oh, mahalo, Margaret.
I look forward to more work. But before you go, I need to hear about this Swim Maui challenge and what you did, because I felt like that was very empowering. So
Oh
talk
yeah,
about that.
mahalo, Margaret. It means a lot what you've said, and then I'm trying my best. Epic Swim Maui. It was kind of an initiative, an attempt to bring together, sport, community, organizations, and cultural practitioners into one program, into one project. And so, yeah, it was a felt like a very long time. I think we spent the month in Maui. And we would swim for X amount of hours every day, and then stop off and sleep, eat, and then do it again until we eventually went around the whole thing. So I was very fortunate to swim alongside some amazing swimmers from all over the world and locally. I think there were folks from India, from Chile, Scotland, Egypt, just an amazing people in the sport of marathon swimming. So I was very fortunate to get the call up to do that. And then two other gentlemen, Stefan Ranke and Ryan Leong, who are mentors of mine and big supporters of, everything water here in Hawaii, were the other two of Hawaii that got to do it. So we did the swim, and during the swim we were taking data, we were taking salinity, microplastic readings, water samples at different points in the swim, and so that was to be used in science and the monitoring of, the health of the ocean surrounding Maui. Looking at, if there were freshwater springs underneath the ocean, microplastic levels, things like that. Yeah.
So that is really pretty interesting work. So it just was to raise awareness of the ocean health. That was the purpose of this swim.
Yeah, that
What
was
did you
certainly
find out
the.
about the ocean around Maui?
Oh, I just tell my friends that I just have absolute reverence for that ocean, the ocean. I think, again, I've done a lot of swimming in my day. I've swum a lot of laps, and there were still points where, wow, the ocean will always have complete control, no matter how competent you are. And so, yeah, there was some very hard times while we were swimming, and I just have nothing but respect.
I
And I
think
feel very
that's
fortunate, to have seen Maui from a different angle, I suppose.
and the information you collected, do you know what's happened with that? Have they put a report out since you
Yeah,
left?
they're. They are analyzing that data right now. I'm not sure. I'll have to check back in to see who's released what. But what I do know is there were some big brains involved, you know, locally and internationally. So.
Well, is that going to happen again, do you think, or is that was just a one-time epic Maui swim?
Good question. I don't think I plan on doing it again. I think once is enough.
Oh, okay.
That's enough for me anyway.
So it was very challenging, is
It
what
was
you're
very,
telling
very
me.
challenging. Very challenging. Yeah. And you know, it's not every day that I get a month to do something like that. You know, I've got some more responsibilities and some other ventures that I'd love to pursue.
Well,
But yeah.
I hope you keep pursuing this area till we get it to the point, I mean, that we think we've made a lot of progress. And I think you stating that you want to read more research about what New Zealand and in its indigenous Maori people have learned from water safety. I think that's what you were saying to me. Is that true? I mean,
Yeah, they've certainly done a lot of research in that field, and there's some pretty amazing people over there doing some great work.
so you'll just have to give me a contact so we can get them on the air. But I hope you continue that, even though you have a new position at the Department of Health, right? What,
Right,
where
yeah.
are you now?
So currently I'm an epidemiologist in the Office of Health Equity, currently housed in the Chronic Disease Management Division. So
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Okay.
So a
All
little
right.
bit different to injury, but I feel very grateful to be here. You know, I feel invested in, I feel I've got some great supervisors and some great teams that I'm working with. So
Well,
learning a lot.
we expect some great things from you, Clay.
No pressure.
Yeah, well, you're already
Thank
in
you.
this 80-page working document that's not going away.
Oh, that's true.
And
I hope it
everybody's going to
doesn't.
be reading about you. And so, yes, no pressure is right. But I can't say enough about you coming on. And I just started the show because of what's going on. And we're trying to amplify the message that drowning is preventable and showcase what people have done here, what they're doing nationally for drowning, and internationally has become a very interesting area because we have some people that want to collaborate around drowning issues, rip currents, and actually collaborating with taking a lifeguard from here and taking him over to the life save, what is it called? Can't remember the name of the organization in Australia and in UK that you were a lifeguard for. What is it called?
Surf life saving.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They want to just exchange.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah,
And so
it's very important
I think
that
so.
exchange.
Yeah. And so maybe if we continue this and we do a podcast, we'll get more and more people talking and we'll have you back on because I want to know what you're doing because I know you're going to be continuing good things. And Dr. Glennis was, I have never met him, but he was really smart to have you as a student and he as your mentor because it brought forth some really good data. So.
Well, I feel very lucky to have to be studying, you know, and still learning from Dr. Galanis. And I'd be happy to make a connection there too.
That would be great. We
Yeah.
should do that. Okay. Well, thank you, Clay, again. And stay well, keep swimming. And thank you for all the good information you gave us today. I really, really appreciate it. And I think our listeners learned something
Oh,
about
thank you.
you and what you've done.
Oh,
So.
mahalo, Margaret. Mahalo for the, you know, making space for this this work to shine, and
Well,
getting it out there. I think it's really important.
yes, it is. So thank you so much. We will talk soon.
All right, lovely hole.